Live from the Space Talk Radio Studios, it's The Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting live to four continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy, here's the founder and host of The Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday Space Show. This is David Livingston. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are, and I hope wherever you are, it is absolutely as beautiful in your backyard as it is here in the San Francisco Bay Area in Tiburon. What an incredible spring evening, and what a way to come home from an incredible ISDC Space Conference. More about that later. If you would like to call the show today and talk to our guest, that toll-free number 1-866-687-7223. Remember, no call screeners. Let it ring until we can answer it. You're immediately on the air. If you want to have a really good call, don't use a cell phone. Use a regular landline phone. I know they're getting scarce. I know it's antique technology, but I have to tell you, cell phones do not do well on radio. If you'd rather email us, our Yahoo account is taking a powder tonight, which is really weird for Yahoo, but use Dr. Space at thespaceshow.com or thespaceshow@gmail.com. If Yahoo comes back up, I will announce it later in the show. And then for chat on Instant Messenger, ICQ, or CompuServe, the screen name's the same for all of them, Space Show Chat. Remember, the Space Show is a trademark and registered service mark of me, David Livingston. It is all licensed now to our new nonprofit organization, our 501c3, the One Giant Leap Foundation. So now all of your contributions to the Space Show are fully tax deductible. The Space Show does thank Gigadial.net and Andrew for their great free podcasting service. If you're going to use podcasting, I recommend you get a hold of Gigadial and Andrew. That subscription RSS URL is on our website, both of our newsletters. And if you have a problem with it, send me an email to that Dr. Space account. Visit our website, thespaceshow.com. Our comprehensive newsletter is there, uploaded every Monday. All of our coming events are there, plus news and announcements. And then every one of our shows is archived. We're up to 492. And our birthday is coming up later in May, and that'll be 5 years. Everything's now MP3 from last year on, podcasts from May of 05 on. Visit the Space Show store. And, of course, we do appreciate all of you who click on the Space Show button, who do help us out, who do support the Space Show through PayPal. And remember, effective May 1, all of your contributions go to One Giant Leap Foundation. More about that later, or listen to the Sunday Space Show. But they are fully tax deductible, and you will receive notification of us in acknowledgement of your gift to that effect. And then we're still doing Hold the Dates, but not for ISDC. You missed a good one, but New Space 2006 by the Space Frontier Foundation. This is Las Vegas, July 19th through the 23rd. The Mars Society, August 3rd through the 6th in Washington, D.C. And over Labor Day, listeners, I am planning a Bob Zubrin, I don't know what you would call it. We're going to do a play that Bob Zubrin has created right here on the Space Show. More about that later, and you won't see it yet on the newsletter. Let's just say a Labor Day Bob Zubrin play. You know, he's a playwright. And then hold the date for SmallSat, Logan, Utah, August 14th through 17th. And if you really want to think long-term, ISDC 2007, May 24th through May 28th in Dallas, Texas. So that brings us to our guest today who was at ISDC. I looked for him with 1,350 people there. I could not find him. Our guest is one of our returning greats to the Space Show, Chip Prosser. He is a well-known writer, director, cinematographer, and film producer. He has either created, wrote, produced, or directed numerous films and documentaries, including many having to do with space. He is in film festivals. He has won awards. He has filmed things like the Space Frontier Foundation for the Foundation. He wrote for Mars Run, which was for HBO. And he has awards, including something called an Emmy, the Hatch Award, a Peabody Award, and much more. His projects include Top Gun, Pensacola Wings of Gold, and lots more. He is currently still working with his new documentary, Gaia Selene, Saving the Earth by Colonizing the Moon. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. And it is really an honor to welcome back to the program Chip Prosser. How are you, Chip?
I'm fine, David. How are you?
I am fine. And, you know, we're going to have our break in just a few minutes. But since you were last on, a lot has happened in the world, and you were at ISDC. What's new that's applicable to Gaia Selene, which we talked about when you were last on the show? I mean, so much has happened in the world since then. And then there were so many sessions at this conference that had to just be enormously supportive for the work you're doing. What can you tell us?
Well, I think since I started doing this documentary around 2004, gasoline was at $28 a barrel, and I predicted it would be going higher. Now I think most people in the country, if not the world, realize that global warming is real and that we have to do something about it. I see from the ISDC a few people starting to make the connection that we need to go into space and to the moon to get primary power, clean, renewable primary power from the sun and from fusion. And I was encouraged that a number of people at the convention gave papers on that subject. I also found a few people still resisting the idea that we're going to the moon first and then to Mars and using the moon as a stepping stone and as a filling station for rocket energy and also for energy for the Earth. And then there was a new concept, not a new concept, but a new proponent of the concept, which was General Warden, who's now head of Ames, who has the concept of a sunshade out in the one of the Lagrange points to shade the Earth.
Hold it right there, Chip. I'm getting blasted with our break music. Everybody stay where you are. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Chip Prosser on The Space Show.
The mission of The Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back to the program. This is your host, David Livingston, our guest today, Chip Prosser. And Chip, before we took that break, you were talking actually about Pete Warden was even there and talking about his SunShield program.
Right. And the SunShield being a series of solar panels that would shield the sun, shield the Earth from the direct sun rays to a certain degree, which would bring down the solar flux and shade the Earth to combat global warming. It's a concept I've heard before, but it's very interesting that the head of Ames Research is a proponent of it. And the actual material would come from the moon, so that presupposes that there would be at least a lunar base capable of doing this, sending the material up there.
How plausible do you think that really is? Do you think it's, and did they say, because I missed the luncheon, did they say what that kind of a program might cost?
As usual, multiple billions of dollars. But considering what we're losing now and what we're going to lose from global warming, it's not really a factor. Whether it's plausible or not, I'm not sure. I've heard the concept before. And this is a pretty learned guy, and I'm just encouraged and surprised to hear him proposing this technology.
He has another really innovative idea for the moon. He wrote a chapter in a book called Return to the Moon, and I don't really want to make this into a Pete Warden show, but he said some of the most useful things we could do to the moon to serve the humanity. So he's always connecting everything into humanity, like this program that you're talking about, would be to put a high-risk scientific lab on the moon, where if you're going to go back and do something like engineer the Spanish flu genes of the early part of the century to see why that thing killed so many people and to try to come up with an antidote to it or a way to stop it, you could put that lab on the moon, and that way if it got out or if something happened to it, you wouldn't be putting Earth or Earth populations at risk. And his chapter is about using the moon for high-risk research projects that would benefit humanity, which I thought was one of the more compelling ideas yet about going to the moon.
Right. That's and there are other sides of that issue, and the gray goo problem, which is deals with nanotechnology in the same way that a carbon-based virus could get away. They worry about nanomachines, replicating nanomachines, going unstoppable, and if it happened on Earth, replicating each other to the effect that the whole Earth would turn into what they call gray goo. If this is a possibility, that research also should be done on the moon where it can be isolated, and also exploration of other solar bodies where we may contaminate going outwards or be contaminated bringing things back would also best be done from the moon. So all these ideas are indeed other reasons to colonize the moon, as if there weren't enough.
Well, you have a great DVD that shows a lot of applications, not just on the moon. And that, I guess it's about 2 years old now?
I started it 2 years ago. I finished it about a year ago. And I keep updating it week by week as I get better images.
And I suspect it's as current, if not more current today, than the prototype copy of it I have that is about 2 years old.
Yeah, it's what we are what we started talking about just a few months ago, seriously, about how to get energy. You know, I predicted an energy crisis. Well, I didn't do it, but the scientists I interviewed did. Predicted an energy crisis, which came along rapidly. Predicted a pollution and global warming crisis, which we're now all conscious of. So it's not as earth-shaking as it was 2 years ago, but it's still relevant. And the thing that has not been totally connected is the idea, both among the public and above the scientists that we see at the convention, that the moon is the answer to a lot of these problems and that we should be accelerating and spending more to get there, not less. And we shouldn't be talking about eviscerating the space program because we have problems like Katrina. We should say problems like Katrina are an indication of the problems we're going to be in if we don't go to the moon, if we don't go up somewhere and get free energy, not free, but clean and renewable energy, that will wind up being much cheaper than what we're doing now, especially if you consider the bad side of burning oil and carbon. It's not just the $3.50 that I just paid to fill up my tank per gallon. It's the damage it does to the environment and to our health. So all things considered, we absolutely should have, in essence, a Manhattan Project to go to the moon and start getting energy.
I want to talk about that, but let me read you this email that just came in from Bill in Mesa, Arizona.
Sure.
And he says, Mr. Prosser, I'm not really sure I believe in global warming, but that is not really the discussion of this show. I'm curious for your opinion, what percentage of our energy crisis and high prices do you think come from greed and corruption of the energy companies and the producer nations versus the real legitimate part, which is an energy problem, regardless of how it's caused?
There is a real energy problem, and when we are in a crisis of any natural resource, of course greed is going to come to the front because, all the gloves are off. These people are now free to charge basically whatever they want to charge, and that's exactly what they are doing. They're also definitely affecting our political situation by putting their people in to do their bidding. It shouldn't be a surprise that as carbon-based fuel becomes more dear, and we pay more, and we pay more to obtain it, we pay more to defend the way it gets to this country. Of course, greed is going to be in there at all stages. Greed, as they said in that movie, could be good if we use the greed to go and get clean energy in a new frontier. And I'm speaking of a new frontier on the moon and in space. And, you know, our frontier, the American frontier, was enabled in large part by greed as well. People wanted to come here, get the new resources, get open land, bring back gold, bring back beaver pelts, and make a lot of money. That's one way we should be using greed to have a beneficial effect for society. There's a lot of money, more than you can imagine, in going off of Earth, out of our enclosed globe, and getting the natural resources that are out in space. And that includes solar energy, helium-3 energy, according to Dennis Wingo's book, platinum and precious metals that we need, and carbon, and oxygen and helium, hydrogen from the moon, and from comets and various other bodies. But greed certainly has a place. We just have to put in the right delta V.
Yes, that is true. I guess how you get the right delta V is the question. And that leads to this question on chat from Bill in Virginia. He says, how do we get there and settle the place?
That's the question for my next documentary, which I've gotten a financier interested in putting up the money for. That's going to be called Colonizing the Moon in N Easy Steps. And N meaning I don't know how many steps there are, and I would like to hear from people what their ideas are. In basic terms, according to Alan Binder and many other scientists, we know how to get there. We knew how to get there 40 years ago, and it's just engineering now. It's not rocket science anymore. It's a question of the political will. What we need, in my opinion, since at the meeting, what we heard was you can't raise the money privately because it's such a long turnaround to return on investment. And you can't raise the money through government because Congress changes every year and they'll vote out what you voted in last year, so there's no long-term effect. What we need is a Manhattan Project for space. Call it the Moonhattan Project. We need a president or someone in power to say it's a national security issue.
I've been saying it for years, but no one listens.
No one listens, right. And no one listens. It's like what we need is that letter from Einstein to Roosevelt saying we need a Manhattan Project because if we don't, the Nazis will get it first and they'll blow us up.
Well, even Dr. Criswell challenged me when I said, David, your plan is not going to fly economically, but let's do it for national security and damn the cost. And, you know, he resisted national security, you know, wouldn't go that route.
Well, one thing, and the negative thing that I saw at this convention, and I see at every convention, is everybody has their own little vector, and people are very hesitant to all march in step and say this is what we all need to do. And going back to the Manhattan Project analogy, and I recommend an excellent book, one of the Pulitzer I just read, which is American Prometheus, about Robert Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project. All the scientists there were going at different vectors until they all had to pull together because of national security. And when Roosevelt and Conant and the other leaders of that time, being alerted by Einstein and others, said, this is a real danger to us. This is a real issue. If we don't do this, very bad things will happen. And they got $30 billion in 3 years cracked the atom and created the atomic bomb. Now, if we had the will, we could do essentially the same thing in under 10 years and perhaps for $300 billion, but it doesn't matter because the economy is so much greater now. If we said that global warming is a serious issue that's going to affect everybody detrimentally all across the world, there may be wars caused by it, there'll be many deaths and so forth, and the energy crisis has the capability of doing the same thing. We have to project our powers all around the world to capture our energy resources. If we say that these two great dangers are equal to the dangers of World War II, if we say for our own national security, we have to do something to get energy for ourselves and for everybody else on the world that doesn't depend on these polluting energy sources, it would happen.
Driving back from ISDC yesterday, and I have a little four-cylinder Camry, I filled up at a unknown gas station in Ventura. You know where that is?
Yeah.
$55 for 14 gallons.
I filled up an hour ago. It was $3.67 on Ventura Boulevard in L.A.
Well, you guys are worse than we are in the Bay Area, but, I mean, this is outrageous.
Right, and predictions are, when I was shooting this, the prediction was $130 a barrel, double what it is right now. So, I mean, if you traveled in Europe 10, 15 years ago, you got a taste of it. When the last time I was there, it was $5 or $6 a gallon.
Right.
And that's why they have more efficient cars. But that's not the real issue. According to Marty Hoffert and the people in my documentary, the size of the shortfall and the effect on it, on the Earth, are much greater than we can deal with any of the technologies we have here. And then you hear how many things on the news about corn and how many things about hydrogen technology. These things are not enough. What we need to do is get power, solar power, either from space or from the moon, both of which include the moon in it because the material to build them in space would most logically come from the moon, and fusion power from helium-3, also from the moon. So these are the two technologies that they foresee as being capable of giving us the clean energy that we're going to need. And if we are able to do this with that energy, it raises the living standard of people around the world by a factor, I don't know what you remember Criswell said, something like a factor of 13. That is what we should be looking forward to, not grabbing as much oil as we can and stuffing it in our strategic reserve.
Here's a question from Jane in San Diego, and she says, Dr. Livingston, you're always saying this on the show. I'd like your guest to comment on it. Since when was the last time any of you, or specifically you, Mr. Prosser, heard any elected official at any level, local, state, federal, or any level that may even be higher, talk about the energy crisis with a possible path to a solution coming from space?
Never. I don't think the closest I got was I was in the audience for Al Gore's film, and he laid out the problem very, very completely. And I highly recommend his film, which is coming out in about a week. However, he did not connect it to space technology or power from the moon.
Yeah, he's not a spacer by any means.
Right. There is a disconnect here which is hard to understand when there's so many intelligent people in the space community. And it's like, you know, when I titled my show Gaia Selene, I was trying to get a new meme, a new thought pattern into the consciousness of the Earth and the Moon are a two-planet system. That the Gaia hypothesis from the Earth and the Selene goddess are all part of one problem and one solution. And it's amazing to me that with all the intelligent people in the space community, they haven't made the connection and they haven't propagated it. Because if you were there, you saw the Planetary Society, for one, is having press conferences which were covered by three cameras, one of which was mine. And they're concerned about science and science education in America, as they should be. And their solution is to have a press conference, pass out buttons.
Okay, hold it there, Chip. Break time. Everybody, back in 2 minutes with Chip Prosser.
The Space Show thanks its listeners and sponsors for their support. Having a spacefaring society and culture is not only important, it's crucial for humanity. It is also a large undertaking for everyone involved in this mission, and The Space Show is no exception. So join with us by visiting www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Please make a contribution which will help us in continuing to bring you our programming and services, all free of charge. The Space Show also has available opportunities for advertising and sponsorship on air, the archived programs, the newsletter, and the website. For information, contact Dr. Livingston at drspace@thespaceshow.com or 415-435-6018. Again, The Space Show thanks you for listening and for your support.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And The Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. And welcome back to the program. This is your host, David Livingston, and our guest today is Chip Prosser. And Chip, you have a website, and I know that some of the ISD material will actually soon be on your website. Before we go any further and take some questions from Marshall, who's patiently waiting down there around Dallas, Texas, tell us about your site and what you're going to be posting on it.
Well, the site is called Gaia Selene, like my show, G-A-I-A, Gaia Selene, like the moon goddess, S-E-L-E-N-E. .com, one word, GaiaSelene.com. It's also at spacecommand.org. You can also reach the same page. It's the site through which I explain and sell the DVD. I have the actual scientific papers that are the backing of the DVD up there, and I also have a video podcast page, so through the new Democracy Player. So you can go right to the podcast page and download a number of video clips. Right now, they're out of the documentary. There's some clips from last year's ISDC conference. And as soon as I can get it cut and posted, I will have the Pete Warden talk from this, I believe it was this Sunday.
Right, this Sunday's luncheon.
Right, at the ISDC, in which he explains the concept of the, I guess they're calling it the sunshade. Sunshade he proposes to post out at L1, I believe.
And what's phenomenal is this guy's the new director of NASA Ames.
Right, right.
So
that's a good sign.
That is a very good sign.
Yeah. So anyway, you can get a taste of the video. You can also buy the video through the site.
Here is a message from Marshall in Saxey, Texas, who's been patiently waiting, actually has a couple of questions for you. The first one is, nanotechnology, micro-robots cannot be 100% isolated on the moon or in space. A robot could simply wait in orbit until conditions are ripe for reproduction. How do we prevent robots from reproducing in space? I've already given him some offline comments, but I'll let you answer that one direct.
The answer is, I don't really know. I know I think I know that it's better that they do it out there rather than on the surface of the Earth, where it seems like they could spread more rapidly. But I think distance, the fact that they can't so easily hide in all the geological processes, they'd possibly be more visible or detectable by other spectrum. But general, the general thought is the moon is the best isolated laboratory that we have nearby, other than perhaps deep space. There may be a deep space facility further out and further isolated that we may want to do these things on. But I think anything is better than doing it in our backyard.
He also has a question that says France, China, and several other nations are betting on fission. Why not plutonium and fusion?
I'm sorry, they're betting on fission?
Yeah, fission. So why not on plutonium and fusion?
Well, first of all, you know, plutonium is probably one of the most toxic elements there is. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to store it. I saw a plan for telling people 10,000 years from now not to dig where we store our plutonium. We don't have a good answer to what the radiation problems are. In other words, it's not only the waste from the reactor fuel itself, it's the fact that it gets into the groundwater and spreads. Now it's spreading toward the Columbia River from the Hanford. That's one thing. The other thing is, according to the scientists at the Union of Concerned Scientists, in terms of uranium, we've already picked all the low-hanging fruit. In other words, we've mined all the easily mineable uranium. Uranium is another resource, like oil, that we have to go out and find and then mine and then, you know, purify, transport, protect, and then disperse. And then we've also found that nuclear plants, fission plants, have a certain lifespan because they get radiated. Everything about them becomes radiated, and they have to be eventually entombed. So there are many problems with fission, and people are going to it because it's a known technology. We've put billions and billions of dollars into this technology, and we are much further along in this technology than fusion. Fusion may be